Today's Taisho is on case 27 in the Pyen Lu, the Heikigan Roku, the Blue Rock Collection. Case 27 is entitled Umon's Golden Breeze. Engo's introduction. One question and he answers 10. One corner and the other are made clear. Seeing the hare, he lets go the hawk. Using the wind, he makes fire. Now, not sparing the eyebrows may be put aside for a while. How about your entering the tiger's cave? See the following, the main subject. A monk asked Umon, what will it be when the trees wither and the leaves fall? Umon said, golden breeze. You will embody the golden breeze. Setcho's verse. Significant the question, pregnant the answer too. The three phrases are satisfied. The arrow penetrates the universe. The wind blows across the plain. Soft rain clouds the sky. Don't you see the master of Shorin Temple not yet returning? Wall gazing, meditating quietly now on Yuji Peak. Thank you so much for doing such an excellent job. Everybody is sitting with great determination, and it's really wonderful. I also want to thank people who came last night for their sitting this morning. Really excellent, deep sitting this morning. Thank you so much. It's kind of unusual to see people sit so well. It's easy if you've been practicing for a while to take for granted how accomplished you really are. You know, you might not feel particularly accomplished on day three of a sesshin, but you are. Don't sell yourself short. I have been teaching. Meditation, a beginner's meditation at the De Cray School in Plainfield. I don't really know how that's going to work out, but the first time I did it, it was advertised in their on their website, and 10 people showed up. I brought cushions and mats, and a number of people looked baffled. They said, I thought this was going to be a talk on Zen practice. And I said, oh no, this is, what good is the talk? You know, this is what it's all about, you know. So I got them to take off their shoes. But it was a struggle getting everybody onto the mat. And people after 15 minutes, people were, you know, ready to pass out and things like that. You know, it was very difficult for them. To be able to sit for 80 minutes with very brief breaks in between takes many, many years of concentration. And it's also the case that it does change your life. Your baseline is constantly changing. When you get up in the morning, you don't feel different from perhaps the way you did 10 years ago, but you're quite different, you know. With the Zen too, you know, when you first started practicing, your mind was in a very different place, very different place than it is now. It's difficult to detect that because your baseline keeps changing. You just know the mind you're in now, and you don't really have access to the mind you had, say, 10 years ago or 5 years ago or whatever. But you're in a very different place, and it may be true that, you know, you still are reactive to certain circumstances. Certain things might cause you to be fearful or angry, but you know, those are very usually very deeply rooted karmic responses, karmic conditionings that go back to like your earliest life. And so it takes a long time to harmonize the whole being. They say in Zen that the first part of Zen practice is going up the mountain, and the second part is going down the mountain. This is sort of an idealized view of Zen practice, but up the mountain means up to Daikensho, and then down the mountain means what? You know, it means integrating all of the things in your life into your awakened mind. So people often think of enlightenment as this thing that happens to them, and then bam, you know, they're infallible, they never get angry, they're always in a state of equanimity, and that's just not true. You will sometimes meet teachers who are not well integrated. So, you know, I've definitely met Zen teachers who were not well integrated. They may have, as we say, had Daikensho, but they hadn't done a good job of integrating everything in their life into that awakened awareness. So, you know, they were sort of trapped in a split screen situation. You know, it's possible to sit on the cushion and be in that radiant, awakened mind, and then off the cushion, you're a different person, and you haven't brought that over into your everyday life. So the Zen process is complicated because it's not just transforming your consciousness on the cushion, but integrating. Now, I said that the idea of going up the mountain and down the mountain is a kind of an idealized account. It's an idealized account. It's what teachers, I'm a teacher, so we use things that are called heuristics. And a heuristic is a simplified version of something that's going to happen. And it's simplified so you can get the outlines of the thing, but in reality it's always more complicated. So the model of going up the mountain and down the mountain makes it all very neat and clear. But it's really not like that. You know, you're integrating your life on the cushion and your life off the cushion all the time if you're practicing dynamically. And you don't wait for Daikensho to do that integration. And in fact, you know, the so-called Great Awakening experience is not really possible without deeply challenging things in one's life. So you know, everybody here has been practicing for some length of time, many of you for years. And when you look around, you don't necessarily feel any different, but I promise you, you're quite different. So please trust the process. I'm sure sometimes you realize just how different you are, but it's not always obvious. I got a letter. I have a friend of mine who is an English professor, and he is a very, you know, I've met him at professional conferences, and he's, I'm sure you'll never meet him, so there's no possibility of, you know, his practicing with us or something, so I'm not violating any confidences. But he's a really unhappy guy, and he grew up in a really terrible family environment. He had abusive parents. They were physically abusive to each other and to him. And he got married and had a child. And, you know, like everybody who gets married, his desire was not to have a relationship like his parents had. You know, he wanted to make it a good relationship, whereas theirs was not a good relationship. But you know, it just didn't work out, and so he's a bachelor again, a bachelor father. You know, he's raising his son, And he has a he works at a university where he doesn't make a lot of money. You know, he has to struggle to make ends meet in the where he lives, which is an affluent community. And we saw each other for years and years, and gradually he heard about how I do Zen. And so he has been so unhappy. He started practicing where he is, and I've been corresponding with him. And he was working on Mu for a while, and then I gave him the koan, this koan. And the koan, just to go over it one more time, is. Master Yunmen, Master Umon says, you know, what will you have or what will be left when the trees wither and the leaves fall? Another way to translate this is, what's going to be there when the last leaf has fallen off the tree in the winter? You know, when all the trees have lost their leaves, what then? See? And Umon posed that question to his monks, and nobody could answer. He came in, you know, and said, "Okay, when the last leaf is last leaf of autumn has fallen off the tree, and winter is here. What then? What will there be?" And nobody said anything. So Umon said, he answers it himself. He says, "Golden wind," or in this translation, it's, "You will embody the golden breeze, a golden wind." So, you know, if you've been doing Zen for a while, you might have some inkling of what this koan is about. But my friend wanted a koan, and I gave him this one. And, you know, he's been working on the koan for years. And, you know, he writes me these long, long emails. You know, it's like, he definitely is an unhappy person. You know, he had a very unhappy childhood. He doesn't feel successful in his professional life. He feels like he's not a good parent. You know, I could go on and on, all the things that he feels, a lot of self-loathing. You know, in other words, he's a human being, right? We all have some of these aspects in our personality. And, you know, he writes me these emails, and, you know, basically he's they're long emails, and I'm happy to receive them. You know, he's an English professor, so he likes to write. So he likes really long emails. But you know, for several years now, he has not gotten anywhere near the koan. And he wrote me another email which started. I'm still making no progress on my koan. And he said something like, he walked right by the answer to his koan. He said, "I'm not making any progress on my koan. All I have to report is," and he basically said, "you know, I was sitting on the cushion and I felt something rising up in me." And he said, "it was something I couldn't control, and I just decided to let it go forward," something like that. But the point is, he said, "I feel something rising up in me. I sat on the cushion, and I felt something like coming to life in me, or rise." I think the way he put it was rising up in me. And he said, "I didn't know what it was, and I felt it was something I couldn't control, so I just decided to let it go freely, or wander freely." And then he was back into his, and it ended the letter saying, "I haven't made any progress with the koan," which is so typical, right? People walk by the answer. But I said, you've answered the koan. I said, that something arising in you on the cushion is what Yunmen, is what Umon wanted you to find when he talked about the golden breeze. You know, when your last leaf is gone and you think nothing is left and you think you have nothing left, something arises in you, you know, something arises in you. And you realize, I can't control this, but I'm going to let it go freely. See, that is a beautiful answer to Yuen Mann's koan. I was so excited when I read this. This was a real breakthrough for this guy. I'm not giving away the answer. Everybody has to experience the koan for himself. But when I read that letter, I was so deeply moved. Because, you know, this is somebody who's abjectly unhappy. And the rest of the letter was also, his son graduated magna cum laude, and yet, his mother, the boy's grandmother, my friend's mother, got involved, and this guy has a bad relationship with his mother, and at one point, you know, at the end of the letter, he's just sobbing. You know, he goes into his room and just starts crying because he feels like he's not a good father. You know, he's a human being. We all have these fears. But, you know, coming out of all this confusion for this one moment, it's like a beam of light coming down, right? You know, just shining. This something stirred in him. Something came to life in him. And, you know, he's in a lot of distress, so he didn't really appreciate what had happened to him. But that's a person who's, if he just sticks with his practice, 10 years later, he's going to be a very different person. Now, 10 years later, when he gets up in the morning and gets off the cushion, he's still going to be neurotic, but he's not going to be uncontrollably miserable, right? He's going to be happy some of the time. And he's still going to have anxieties. He's still going to wonder, have I been a good father? But I would bet $1 million that, 10 years from now, if he just sticks with his practice, he's going to be in a vastly better place. And seeing these dark clouds that I've just rolled, that rolled by me in email after email, seeing these dark clouds roll by, and then all of a sudden there's this parting, and it's like this ray of light comes in. And, as I say, 10 years from now, he's going to be a very different person. So please appreciate, the beams of light that come into your life on the cushion. Rome wasn't built in a day, but one by one, moment by, we transform ourselves hour by hour on the cushion, moment by moment. We're changing who we are. A part of Zen practice is just calming down and learning how to be still. And my friend has done that. The guy who wrote this letter to me, sometimes he's like so unhappy, but I do think sitting has, and he said this, in his emails, he said, sitting does give him this play, gets him to this place where he's not so in such emotional distress. He's calm, he's grounded, at least for a little while on the cushion, and his problems sort of go away, and he's in the moment, which is how he answered the question. And that's a stage in Zen practice. There's a very famous, another very famous koan about Bodhidharma after he did not have a successful interview with Emperor Wu of Liang. Bodhidharma went up into the mountains and sat in a cave for 9 years practicing Pi Kuan, wall sitting. And the poem, in this case, makes a reference to that. When Bodhidharma went to China, Bodhidharma traveled all the way from India to China. He was a famous meditation master in India. He has an interview with one of the leading political figures of his day. The interview doesn't go well, and Bodhidharma goes up and sits in a cave for 9 years. Waiting for a student to show up. That's a funny way to spread the Dharma. But one day somebody actually shows up. And the person who shows up is called the second ancestor of Zen. In Japanese, he's called Shinko. But basically, he's an intellectual. He's very much like my friend. He's studied the Confucian classics. He knows all of this stuff, but he feels terrible about himself. He's very unhappy in his life. He doesn't trust his own impulses. He has a lot of self-loathing. And that's why he's come up there to a cave in the middle of nowhere to study with his Indian master. In this koan, Bodhidharma, the guy says, Shinko says to Bodhidharma, he says, my mind is on fire. My mind is on fire. Pacify my mind. And Bodhidharma says, okay, fine. Here's what I want you to do. I want you to sit down, and I want you to sit down, calm yourself, focus on your breath, and then look at your mind, and tell me where you find your mind. And so Shinko sits down, he begins to watch his breath, and he looks for his mind, and he realizes, I can't really find my mind anywhere. And then he comes back to Bodhidharma and says, I can't find my mind. And Bodhidharma says, how do you feel? And it doesn't say this in the koan, but it must have been like this. Bodhidharma says, how do you feel? And Shinko says, I feel a little better. See? Mushin, right? So basically, somebody in a great emotional distress is shown how to sit down on the cushion and calm his mind and enter emptiness, see? And this is a kind of liberation in itself, right? This was the beginning of Shinko's, transformed existence. Just knowing that you can get to a place that is calm and untroubled, 99.99% of people don't know how to do that. This is why we have an epidemic of drug overuse in America. The most highly prescribed drugs are drugs to deal with anxiety, and I'm not criticizing them, but that's the most highly prescribed drug in America, and it's because their minds are on fire and they don't know how to calm their minds. And it's definitely the case that having a mind on fire is what brought me to Zen. I was not so different from my friend who's been writing me these long, very beautifully written English professor emails full of misery. I found Zen very hard to do, like so many people. Sitting on the cushion for 20 minutes was a real challenge for me. I went to my first sesshin after doing Zen for about a month. I've told this story before, so please bear with me, but the leader of our group in Seattle was a woman named Wendy Nakao. And she is now the lead teacher, the abbot at the Los Angeles Zen Center, but she was just a recent college graduate at the time. And she was a very beautiful Asian woman, and at the end of an evening sit, she came up to me and said, are you coming to sesshin? And she flashed this big smile. And I said, yes, what's sesshin? Little did I know, And, sesshin was quite a shock, for me. I could barely walk, about day two. But why did I come back? After it was over, it was like, the next one came around, it's like, please sign me up. Because, there at the very least, I could get to this place where I was calm and centered and not in emotional distress. And that in itself is really quite wonderful. You know, just that in itself. And you know, if you practice meditation regularly, when you get into samadhi, it's really wonderful. You know, I'm sure at some point during the sesshin, if this is your third day, maybe sometime today, you know, you'll get into deep samadhi. And everybody experiences samadhi differently, right? You know, so some people experience samadhi as they feel like parts of their body are disappearing or not. You know, some people just suddenly find they can sit for an hour without moving. But you know, when you're in deep samadhi, you're in this very still center place. Your mind is empty some of the time. You have fewer thoughts, or you're not so close to your thoughts. And it, you know, actually, if you stay there, it can be very beautiful, very blissful. You know, there are people who get to be too attached to samadhi. You know, I myself love being in samadhi. It's a great experience, and it's very beautiful. You know, sometimes you just feel blissful, but it's not enlightenment. But it's the first step. You know, getting into samadhi is the first step. And then, you know, basically we have to, like, rebuild ourselves. You know, so one way to think about Zen practice is you have to be able to get, first of all, you have to turn off the emotional distress and get to this place that's centered and grounded and calm. Like Shinko, show me your mind. You know, my mind is on fire, show me your mind. I can't find it. Well, there. And when that first happens to people, it's very liberating, but it doesn't really solve the problem. That's like the foundation. But it's one thing to get escape, get some kind of release from those negative emotions and those destructive mental habits. But it doesn't really solve the problem. The problem is how to rebuild ourselves, right, in a different way. You know, so it can be the case that at a sesshin, you know, on the cushion, you can, you know, relive a lot of your life, and you can see mistakes you've made and things like that. But you know, how do you, you know, earlier I started the sesshin by talking about the fact that the word samsara means repeating. And being able to get into samadhi sort of stops the immediate distress, but how do we avoid repeating? And even having insight into our past mistakes doesn't really avoid repeating. You know, what we have to do is like rebuild our life from the ground up. Rebuild our life from the ground up. You know, so Zen is all about rebuilding your experience of the world from the ground up in little steps, right? Little steps. So you know, there's a wonderful expression I think it was Lin Ji used to say, he said, you know, all these monks want to celebrate the great Zen masters, but nobody wants to talk about the sweating horses of the past. In other words, you know, everybody wants to, pose in a picture with the Dalai Lama, but nobody wants to think about all the monks you've never heard of whose insight and wisdom were transmitted to the Dalai Lama, and they earned that insight and wisdom sweating on their cushions, right? Working through their obstacles. So, you know, we all want to be enlightened bodhisattvas or something like that. But you know, how do you do that? You have to do some sweating on the cushion, and you just take it one step at a time. You know, so what does that mean, one step at a time? Well, what is your relationship to the breath? What is your relationship to sound? What is your relationship to, you know, the moment by moment, the passing of time. You know, those seem simple, maybe even trivial, but that's how your consciousness got started. You know, one day, you discovered your toes. I'm sure you can't remember it. I can't remember it. But it must have been quite a moment, right? You know, you discover, my God, what are these toes? You know, you didn't have a word yet, right? But you suddenly start, these belong to me. What are these? These belong to me. I don't seem to be able to eat them, you know. These belong to me, you know. And then you start putting together the picture of yourself, right? You know, these are toes, these are my toes, you know. And so on. It was like we forgot. Or when you walked, the first time you walked, you know, we don't remember. But, you know, one day, you know, you were a quadruped. And one day, you stood up and you walked on 2 feet. You know, it's like, oh my God, you know. You don't remember it. But you did it, right? And you know, learning how to balance and walk, you know, I think so that was a great skill that took a lot. You had to be a sweating horse, you know. It took you many falls, you know. Your mother was probably watching you carefully. And oops, down you go, and down you go, you know. But little by little, you know, oh my God, you just walked, you know, you just walked a yard. Amazing. Then shoo, down, exhausted, whoa. You know, so Zen practice is like that, right? You know, it's one little thing at a time. We're going to discover our toes, our relationship with our toes. Our relationship to things is distorted. The sutras say upside down. We have upside down views because everything is configured around ourself. And so, you know, when you enter deep samadhi, you realize, wait a minute. You know, we have moments on the cushion when there is no self. And again, if you've been doing Zazen for a long time, you might not appreciate what that means. You know, because your baseline has changed. But most people think that consciousness is the self, and the self is consciousness, and there can't be consciousness without a self. Most people think that. In fact, you know, very famous French philosopher named Descartes said, I think, therefore I am, see? But actually, he didn't do Zazen. Because if you do Zazen, you realize, wait a minute, there's no self-referencing going on here. Myself seems to be absent, but consciousness is continuing. See, myself seems to be absent, but consciousness is continuing. How can there be consciousness without a self? See, and that's like your first walk, first discovery of toes, right? That, the self is not the center of consciousness. The self is an object of consciousness. But consciousness is something that exists independently of the self. See, if you do Zazen, you take it for granted. We all enter a selfless state fairly often. It's like, oh yeah, a selfless state. Of course, right? But actually, that's an amazing discovery. Consciousness exists without the self, or outside, or beyond. The self is contained in consciousness, not the other way around. So what we do when we do Zazen is to rebuild our world, starting with a correct experience of the self and its relationship to consciousness. And so, you know, now we have to do everything, so to speak, all over again. But this time in the right way, without putting the self at the center. So you can't just leap from abject misery to move to Buddhahood. You know, Zen talks a lot about sudden enlightenment, but, you know, mostly that's just propaganda designed to get people to the cushion. You know, sudden enlightenment is a racket, basically, that Chinese monks came up with to get people to sit. They said, yeah, it can happen at any time. Get on the cushion right now. You know, not yet? Well, just keep going. You know, it could happen at any time. you know, 20 years later, somebody has a breakthrough. See, I told you it was instantaneous. So, you know, we have to rebuild our world. It's not enough to be out of emotional distress, although that's a great gift. And it's not enough to see our errors, because seeing our repetition, our patterns of repetition, doesn't give us anything new to do except critique our patterns of repetition. So it's you can say, well, I always do this, I know that, so now what? I don't know. And as soon as you try something new, you're likely to just do it again. So the way to do something new is to enter the selfless state and just take it one step at a time. One step at a time. So, you know, I'm going to, you know, the koans are designed to point you to things, to get you to rebuild your relationship to the world from the ground up, starting with simple things. Like, you know, I mean, there's a koan that says, unfair blows. Well, everybody in life has had unfair blows, right? I mean, everybody in life has been punished for something they didn't deserve, or, you know, beaten up on the playground because they, you know, said the wrong thing or weren't tall enough or, you know, their ears were too big. You know, everybody's had that experience. So we've all had unfair blows, and, you know, we tend to have let those early experiences be very decisive in who we are. So, you know, working with a koan like that is just, how do you deal with unfair blows, you know? And you can deal with unfair blows in a lot of ways. You can plot your revenge, you know, which millions of people do. You know, that's how millions of people, that's the lesson millions of people have gotten from unfair blows. Or you can manipulate other people. You know, that's another thing. You know, I was reading the other day that one of Trump's, Donald Trump's sons, Donald Trump came to visit one of his sons. I think one of his sons went to Harvard, maybe. This is a rumor floating around on the internet, but apparently when Donald Trump went to visit his son in his dormitory at Harvard, his son wasn't wearing a suit. And Donald Trump hit him and knocked him to the ground. That's what I heard. Now, this could be complete baloney, right? But I find that believable, you know? I really do. I find it believable, and I feel sorry for his son, you know? And maybe Trump was somebody who was hit and knocked to the ground, and this is how he has responded to that. He's developed mental habits in response to that. Not that Trump will ever do Zazen, but if he did, you know, he'd have the chance to rebuild himself. And today, maybe that wasn't the best way to respond, you know. Maybe I could respond a different way. It's not a conscious thing. It's just, it's a change at the deeper level of the self, right? It's a bit like your basic orientation. You know, when somebody hits us, we close up, or we want to hit back, but you know, if you go through that koan, you know, it can really make a difference in how you respond to injuries. And you know, there are other koans that deal. There's a koan that says, you know, talks about the sound of the bell. Have you just hearing in a selfless state is a really transformative experience. You know, sometimes we do experience things in a selfless state. You know, people who like to listen to music sometimes go into a selfless state when they're listening to music. They become the music. You know, that's wonderful. But, you know, on the cushion, if we're listening to, we're practicing listening to sound in empty self, you know, you have a whole world is opened up to you. So, you know, we all start out maybe not quite like my friend who wrote those very painful emails about his life and his difficulties, which are real. And, you know, but nevertheless, we all start out somewhat like that. And little by little, you know, we rebuild ourselves. into something very different. You know, I imagine that, you know, Master Joshua, when he got up in the morning, didn't feel any different. You know, he felt, well, I guess this is, you know, that his reality was just the reality right then and there for him. And he probably couldn't remember what it was like when he was 17 years old either, how the world looked to him. But this is what Zen is about. It's a like total reconstruction of the human being from the standpoint of no self. And that's another way of putting from the standpoint of the connected self, right? The connected self. Engo's introduction. One question and he answers 10. One corner and the other three are made clear. Seeing the hare, he lets go of the hawk. Using the wind, he makes fire. Now, not sparing the eyebrows may be put away for a while. How about your entering the tiger's cave? See the following. In other words, you know, you can be quite accomplished in many ways, right? You understand your world pretty well. If you when you see a rabbit, you let the hawk go to catch it. You know how to blow on tinder and make a fire. But this is about rebuilding yourself from the ground up. Main subject: a monk asked Umon, "What will it be when the last leaves have fallen off the tree?" Umon said, "Golden wind. Something is stirring in me. Something is rising in me, and I realize that I don't control it, but I'm going to let it play freely." See, we don't know if the monk has found that yet or not. Sencho's verse: significant the question, pregnant the answer too. The three phrases are satisfied. The arrow penetrates the universe. The wind blows across the plain. Soft rain clouds the sky. Don't you see the master of Shorin Temple not yet returning? Wall gazing. See, that's Bodhidharma facing the wall, meditating quietly now on Yuji Peak.